Hi, everyone, and welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I am Lacey Bargamilas, and I'm the editor here at Televisions. And joining me, as per usual, is my co-host, Miss Annie Bundle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
Forgot my soda before I came in here to do this, so now I'm trying to, like, get back in my seat now that I have more caffeine.
No, oh, okay.
Very exciting in my life, guys.
That's okay.
An exciting time.
I'm recording this with a cat behind one of my screens, which is not usually how I record things. And every so often, a little orange face just goes, "Are you still there? Are you still there? Are you still there? I'm still here. Hi, Ian. I'm still here."
Aw.
Yeah. How are you? So what are we talking about today?
Well, today we are talking about a show that is not British in the strictest sense, but stars like a ton of British performers, and also one we all really liked. And I have had to watch some stuff I did not like recently, so I thought, hey, let's just talk about one that I like so I can
do an episode where
I'm not hating everything.
This is a British-ish show, as we
might say. It's literally, we're going to talk about Manhunt, which is, if you don't know, the Apple TV Plus drama about the aftermath of Abraham Lincoln's assassination. So I don't know that there's a real way to call that British-ish, as it is about the death of an American president. But it has a good dozen really great British actors in it. So we're going to cheat and say, hey, it's a period drama, so it counts. And our good friend of the pod, Sophie Brookover, is here to talk about this with us because she, too, loves historically inaccurate representations of Edwin Stanton.
I do. I'm very into that. I didn't know that that was like a niche of things that one could be into. And it's just really great to be living in a time where you can discover these things, you know, like that there is still something a little surprising under the sun.
Can we talk about the fact that they transposed Edward Stanton's incredible beard to Lafayette Seabaker and made Patton Oswalt wear it instead of Tobias Menzies? I have questions because this is one of those things that like really bothered me and also amused me highly the whole time.
I mean, Tobias Menzies is a good looking man. Tobias Menzies is a good looking man. So I'm not upset that they did not cover his face with the giant beard that the real Edwin Stanton have. Don't believe me, like Google it. It's up there. So I'm not really mad that we didn't have that.
Yeah.
It just amused me that Lafayette Baker did not actually have that beard, and yet there was Patton Oswalt wandering around with it. So
yeah, I think they decided, okay, we gotta have, you know, Lincoln's gonna get assassinated in the very first episode, but we need some type of majestic facial hair here. Can't be for Tobias. His performance is so like focused. It's so facially focused. It would obscure all of these tiny little micro expressions that he does. But we already have it. Like we spent the money on the beard.
We're just gonna stick it on someone else.
Yeah, they go to hair and makeup, and the hair and makeup supervisor is like, "Are you kidding me? You told me to buy these incredibly expensive, high quality fake beards. We're not going to put them on this guy. Like, I'm sorry. These simply cannot go to waste." That's what I imagine happened.
And honestly, of all the people to put him on, Patton Oswalt was probably the best choice because of all the actors in this. And I will say that basically this is a cast of like people who, you know, okay. Like it's not just like Boyle and like Hamish Linklater, who plays Abraham Lincoln, like, you know, like basically almost everybody in this cast. Patton Oswalt is the one that like really like stops you dead because you're like, why is Patton Oswalt there? Right. Like you literally like do a stop and just it pulls you out of it. And so giving him the beard really does sort of like, even though you're going to stop and be like Patton Oswalt, it kind of helps in a weird way. I don't know. It helped me anyway.
The thing, yeah, it's to me, it was neither here nor there.
I'm going to say while we're talking about beards is that we should tell people what the show is.
That's a great idea.
I feel like people don't necessarily know Apple TV as well as they should. Apple TV is underrated and has a lot of bangers.
Yeah.
But the premise of the show is very simple. It is based on a book of the same name, although slightly longer, by James Swanson. It's called Manhunt, the 12-day hunt for Abraham Lincoln's killer. The 12-day chase, excuse me, for Abraham Lincoln's killer. And it is pretty much what it says on the tin. The show essentially starts with the assassination at Ford's Theater, and continues for the next 12 days as Edwin Stanton, who was Lincoln's war secretary and is here played by Tobias Menzies, is spearheading the search not just for John Wilkes Booth, played by Anthony Boyle, who shot Lincoln, but the larger conspiracy around him and who may or may not have been responsible in like a 50,000 foot sense for trying to, you know, basically do Civil War round two. So there's a lot of going to various locations. There's a lot of interrogating people. It's a surprisingly propulsive show and weirdly tense for something that we all know the ending to. But I loved it. And I think a lot of people actually loved it. So if you haven't seen it,
yeah,
consider this your encouragement to give it a try.
Yeah, it's like it's another of Apple TV Plus's like they seem to really be leaning into how can we attract the dads? And
yeah, they do have a strong dad TV.
Yeah, they
block.
Have such incredible, like awesome dad TV. And I say that as a person who like personally loves dad TV. Like if you have a World War II documentary or something, lay it on me. I want to see it. Or if it's like a 10 episode scripted drama.
They have.
They did it. They were like, oh, what do we want to do for this, you know, like opinionated lady in New Jersey? Oh, I know. Masters of the Air. Manhunt.
Franklin, you know, like honestly, like I'm not into Franklin because Michael Douglas as Franklin kind of bores me, but I do see that it got a lot of really great reviews. So
yeah.
I assume that it too will also be just as good.
Yeah.
I've watched two episodes of it and it's fine.
Okay.
Like I don't have a lot of object permanence about Franklin, and my complaints about it are kind of the same as with some other stuff I've watched recently, in the sense that Michael Douglas just is Michael Douglas in a Ben Franklin costume. Which is not as exciting, because I think one of the great things about Manhunt is how unexpected some of its casting choices are. I love Hamish Linklater, who, if you know any of the Mike Flanagan universe from Netflix, he was the priest in Midnight Mass and incredible. And he's a really great Lincoln. Tobias Menzies, also a Brit, not an American, but is a great Stanton. The two of them have great chemistry together. Like, there's just some excellent casting choices going on here that I have yet to see similarly in Franklin.
Yeah. Do you guys want to approach it like thematically, chronologically? It jumps around, like it jumps back and forth in time a bunch.
For once, we're actually talking about a show after it's over. So that's exciting.
Right. We can talk about the whole thing.
I think maybe thematically is the best way to go, because I think there's like big buckets. There's the bucket of the actual like search for John Wilkes Booth. Mm-hmm. There's the bucket of how they sort of portray John Wilkes Booth. There's my favorite thing, which is even though they kill off Abraham Lincoln, well, I say kill off, like the man didn't die.
Right.
But the assassination takes place in the first episode of the show, but right. Lincoln is still in the show via flashbacks, which I think are really well done and very emotional and do a lot of really good work to give the larger story context through the relationship of him and Stanton. I love this Mary Todd Lincoln. Like, I love a lot of things about this. And it's one of those weird things where it's like, well, everybody knows what happens. Yes, 12 days later, they caught John Wilkes Booth at a farm near Fredericksburg, and he was shot. The end. But that's not where the show ends, which is another interesting choice.
That is another interesting choice. I almost wish there had been another, like, one more episode. Beyond that, the very like last 10 to 15 minutes of the final episode felt a little rushed to me. You know, it's funny.
I mean,
you say
seven episodes is a weird choice.
Seven is a weird number.
It's like a very...
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like either it was like designed to be eight and they pared it down, or it was designed to be six and they realized they needed like one more. But the thing that you're mentioning, like everybody knows, the thing is, like, that is technically true. I'm sure I did learn it in history class in high school, but I didn't remember that Booth didn't survive his capture. Which, you know, like I, and in retrospect, like a big thing for Stanton was, so like, let me just back up slightly. Civil War ends. Like 5 days later, 9 days later, something like that, a terribly brief number of days later, John Wilkes Booth shoots Abraham Lincoln in the back of the head at Ford's Theater. Lincoln dies. His emergency medicine wasn't what it is now. And then Stanton has to, who was the Secretary of War at the time, had to drop everything to run this manhunt for Booth. And partly as a consequence of Lincoln's death, not just the manhunt takes a lot of his waking hours, but also Andrew Johnson becomes president and he's horrible.
Boo, Andrew Johnson.
You know, basically undoes a ton of what Lincoln and Stanton were working on with regard to Reconstruction, like trying to reintegrate the, you know, the Confederate states into the Union, making sure that there would be, you know, healthy places economically and socially for freed Black people to participate in our society and politics. And Stanton has, I think, the brilliant idea, you know, even as he's really, really furious, and correctly so, about like Reconstruction sort of getting, you know, whittled away and whittled away, and his own health is deteriorating rapidly because he had asthma, which they did not have terrific treatment for back in the olden times. But he has the great idea to, he susses out super quick that what Booth wants more than anything is to be somebody. Like, he wants everyone to talk about him. He wants to be famous. He wants to be notorious. And his, Stanton's decision to ensure that Booth was buried in an unmarked grave, I think was really, really, really prescient. I'm so glad that I have no idea where that man's final resting place is, because it is way too easy to think about the number of like lost cause aficionados and death cultists and just your garden variety racists who would be flocking there to pay tribute to this guy who, you know, eagerly,
I believe the phrase is, struck a blow for the South.
There you go. Eagerly participated in what absolutely could well have been like the end of these United States of America, like absolutely could have rebooted the Confederacy.
Yeah. So, I mean, Lacey grew up in Richmond, so she knows what I'm talking about when I talk about Monument Drive, and that
it's Monument Avenue.
Monument Avenue.
Right.
With the
statues to our glorious Confederate dead.
I remember the first time I ever saw the huge Lee statue, the Jefferson Davis statue with all the little 13 pillars around him. I could easily imagine that had Wilkes Booth had been not buried in an unmarked grave, that somebody might have put a statue up of him too on that row.
I mean, for those of you who've never been to Richmond, Monument Avenue no longer contains these statues. They have been since taken down, but it was a couple of years ago, and I never thought that would happen in my lifetime. So progress is possible.
Yes.
But the reason the Jefferson Davis statue is so weird is it was supposed to be the end of the street originally, and that is not what happened.
Yeah.
So the street kept going, and then they put a statue of Arthur Ashe, the famous tennis player, on it.
I always thought of it as the reminder that the South lost the war.
Visually weird.
Was Arthur Ashe also from Richmond?
Yes, he was.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Then it makes a lot more sense. But I was just
he is a. It was just literally a street. The statues were Robert E. Lee, Jeb Stuart, Stonewall Jackson, the guy who invented the torpedo, and Jefferson Davis.
Yep.
And Arthur Ashe.
And then Arthur Ashe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, not to take anything away from Arthur Ashe and his accomplishments, and, you know, may he rest in peace for sure.
Oh,
but
no,
like,
I'm looking at it more of a, like, one of these things is very much not like the other sort of way.
Yes, yes, yes. Incredible contributions.
Very jarring tonally.
Yes, yes. I was going to say awesome contributions, not in the same area.
I have to say,
I don't think it was right after Jefferson Davis's. I think it might have been right after the guy who like invented the torpedo. I forget what his name is. He's some military Confederate who did something with boats.
So the thing
is, going to send me some mail about not knowing that, but whatever.
The thing is about Manhunt is that, you know, I don't know about the rest of you, but I grew up here in Northern Virginia, in which like they definitely made nods towards the fact that we were in a southern state, even though we were technically North America, or technically North, and like in what was referred to as the People's Republic of Alexandria back then, in a red state. They acknowledged that there were many people in our class who referred to this as the war between the states, and there were lots of nods towards the lost cause. And you know, this was, I also went through ninth grade, which is when
I love to say this, is that I love to always tell people this because I truly did not know it. I, as Annie said, grew up in Richmond, product of Virginia public schools, did not understand that not every state celebrated Lee Jackson King Day until I got to college.
Yeah.
What even is that?
That was, it was on MLK Day. When I was growing up, that was MLK Day. It was a combo deal where you celebrated MLK and also Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson.
Huh.
Yep.
Yeah. And I thought everybody did that, but I was wrong. Didn't know that.
In our,
this is why we go to college, kids.
The other reason that I bring that up is you guys are about my age. So we did the Civil War in ninth grade, which was a couple of years right after Ken Burns's Civil War had come out. So the unit leaned very heavily on showing us that PBS documentary, which at the time was basically the documentary that
it's good.
Made Ken Burns, basically. And nowadays, we know that some of what he did was actually very problematic, that he was tried to be very both sides. He had Shelby Foote, who was a Southern apologist. Nowadays, like that, there were things in there that would not have been put in there nowadays. And I feel like that there were definitely senses of Manhunt trying to a little bit correct the record. I felt it very much came down very hard on Andrew Johnson, who is a terrible, terrible president. I mean, he was the first one to be impeached, right? I think, right? Yeah. And he was, you know, and Stanton's hatred of him, like, we are definitely supposed to hate him, even though it's not just that Stanton hates him, we are supposed to hate him. And it's very obvious that we're supposed to hate him, especially since, like, we see how his policies play out via Mary Sims, who is...
Right. Well, I mean, he also is constantly at the top of the list of polls for, like, the worst presidents in history. So I really don't think that... I don't know that there was, like, a movement to sort of, like, make Andrew Johnson cool again, because I'm pretty sure everybody acknowledges that he sucks. But I do like the nod to the conspiracy theory that he was in on it.
Yeah. I also really love, I had remembered seeing the whole thing about Samuel Mudd's, Samuel Mudd's family rather recently, within my lifetime, tried to go to the Supreme Court to get his name cleared. And I don't remember when this happened, but I think it was around the time I was in college. And so having him... having his story put here and having the story very much center him as part of this conspiracy and very much in deep with Booth was also, to me, very much felt like I was watching a corrective of his family has been trying to clear his name and no, we will not allow this.
Yeah, I quite like that this is a show where like, to me, it felt like, you know, that the showrunner of the creator, Monica Bielecki, who is from my home city of Philadelphia, yay, so, that I got the impression that one of the things she was working on with regard to within this project was just flowing from the assumption that we absolutely do not need to apologize for the fact that the North won, that the Union was, in fact, saved. Like those are, we do not need.
That was a good thing.
Yeah. There's absolutely no need to like both sides, any of this. Like,
yes,
they were wrong. The slave states, they were just wrong. And it is also, I think, a really useful corrective. I cannot tell you how many times I've heard over the course of my life. Oh, well, it was a different time. I could not care less. Like, whenever people say that, it's almost always a preface to the idea that makes it okay that a certain group of human beings were treating some other group of human beings as though they were not, in fact, actual human beings. And I'm like, nope, not interested in that whatsoever anymore. Thank you. Like, no, I have had my lifetime daily allowance of that, and I will not be ingesting any of that anymore. Thank you.
And I think that's part of why I find Anthony Boyle's performance of John Wilkes Booth so compelling, because
incredible.
He does not ever mince anything. He never tries to make this man.
He drops the N-word several times.
Yes.
And And the way that he treats someone like, I brought up Mary Sims. Her character is basically, she's a quote-unquote servant who is basically still a slave to Samuel Mudd, even though she's been freed. And she is one of those who gets the land left to her, and she basically leaves him. And the removal of the 40 acres in Mule means that she basically loses her land by the end of the series and ends up having to go back to work for Mudd. And it's terrible when she has to go back.
Yeah.
Just terrible.
Well, and yet, like, she's in her bravery in testifying against Mudd is just like, to me, that is like the most American thing that anyone in the entire series does.
Yes.
Like that is, she's showing what an incredible faith she has in the value of the entire project of the United States.
That she truly believes that the system will work and the system will work for her.
Right.
Even though she has seen to the contrary in every single aspect of her life.
Yeah.
And I because that's pretty much the first person that we see Booth interact with outside of shooting Lincoln. It really is one of the more startling moments is how he doesn't just treat her as subhuman, but like just absolutely like she's an object that he can just just sexually harass and abuse and just it's horrifying. And you know, there's always this thing about how like an actor has to find like the good in a person to like play them. Boyle just doesn't even do that. Boyle is just like nope. Yeah.
Well, what's really interesting about Mary Sims' story specifically, or rather how they choose to tell Mary Sims' story in this show, is that that's not what happened. Not all of it anyway. She did absolutely testify against Mudd, but she never met Booth at his house.
Oh,
she was not still in his employ at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I think she left somewhere right after the war ended, maybe like 1864-ish. So they have added all of that stuff, I think, for the reasons that you guys were just talking about to illustrate those themes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like that's a choice to do that as opposed to like retelling the history, which I think makes it actually even more interesting that they chose to use her story that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she did absolutely testify at his trial, and that's like a lot of that what she said survived still, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But some of the earlier episode stuff is not what happened, but they chose to show it that way, which I think is equally interesting.
Yes.
The loss of her land, the gaining and the losing of her land is obviously not historically accurate because it's too compressed. And that is actually like, it feels like it happens in the course of a couple of days. And clearly that would never have happened. That would have happened over the course of months.
Right.
And actually, it's almost a shame that it gets pushed into a couple of days in order to illustrate this for us, because over the course of months or even years, like somebody has time to really build the dreams before it gets snatched away.
Yes.
Whereas he or she almost doesn't even have that time. But I get why they do that for the reason of illustration. And I get and that's necessary, I think, which is why they do it. That being said, I the other thing I couldn't stop thinking about with Boyle's performance is that when we were at the TCA, somebody asked him how much he knew about John Wilkes Booth because he's Scottish.
He's from Belfast. He's from Northern Ireland. He's not Scottish.
Sorry. I know he's not actually English, but
yes.
He said that the only thing he knew about John Wilkes Booth was the Simpsons episode where they do the We Are the Mediocre Presidents and Bart Simpson pops up with the two machine guns and says hasta la vista, baby, and shoots Lincoln. And I just kept thinking of that watching episode one.
Yeah, he's that performance is so great. And I love that, like, in every interview he's just like, that guy was a narcissistic bigot. He was horrible. He got actively worse, like from ages 16 to 26. And there's no excuse for anything that he did. The end. Like, that's we are just not going to entertain any
that he could have been a good person.
No, he could not have been a good person. I pity him, but that's because it is sad that he chose to do this. And it's also sad that, like, the way that they tell the story in the show is that he's driven not only by, like, these totally bananas, grandiose ideas of, like, becoming a hero, a symbolic hero to the Confederacy, but, you know, that he also ultimately is driven by this, like, awful, petty jealousy over his brother and his father. Like, he just feels like he's never going to be good enough. And so he does this to prove that he's, you know, someone big and important outside of the Booth family name. And I'm just like, okay, that's sad. But, like, lots of people have felt that way and not actually done murders or any violence at all.
I was going to say, like, listen, the Baldwins exist and none of them have assassinated a president. Okay. That, there's five of them and they've all managed not to.
Right. Like that bar is so, like, that bar is several sub basements down in the earth. And yet, like, he couldn't clear it. He couldn't do it.
Anyway, sorry, Lacey. I slightly interrupted you.
Oh, no, I was just going to talk about the great Stephen Sondheim musical Assassins, if anyone has seen it, in which
Love that
John
musical.
Wilkes Booth is a character.
Yes, he is.
And sings.
Amazing.
Assassins is about all the people who have assassinated or attempted to assassinate a president.
And John Wilkes Booth's song is actually, like, killer. Let's just, not to make too bad puns, but apparently I just did. Oops. I do actually, one of the things that also struck me about this is that I felt like I was learning history that I never knew.
Mm. I want to talk about Monica Bielecki for a second.
Okay, yes,
I love
please.
Her.
Okay.
Yes, let's.
And I think it's actually really important that a woman made the show and not a man.
Mm.
Because I think some of the more interesting character stuff, the more interesting internal stuff, the relationship, which is admittedly my favorite part of the show between Lincoln and Stanton, is all, I think, something that maybe a guy making this story would not have chosen to focus on.
Mm.
But I think those are big parts of the reason why the show works, because so much of it is as internal as it is external. Like, I feel such, like, heartbreak for Stanton because, you know, he's lost his friend. He's trying to, like the show does a great job of showing, like, how really, you know, close and warm and loving they are together. And he's not only lost his friend, he's lost, like, the dream of the America that he built with Lincoln.
Yeah.
And I just think it's really, like, it's very touching in a way that I don't expect from this story. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And
yeah.
I think
oh, yeah.
that I don't know. I'm like, I'm just assuming that it's the female perspective that has brought this around.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense because, you know, like, Annie had said something previously about this incredible performance by Lily Taylor of Mary Todd Lincoln.
My one complaint about this show is I wish it had more of Mary Todd Lincoln in it. That's my
Same.
One complaint.
I think that would be terrific.
I have to say, this is probably the only time I have ever wanted more Mary Todd Lincoln in anything.
No, I mean, not to derail this, Sophie, please make me shut up and go back to your point in a second, but Mary Todd Lincoln gets such a bad rap.
Oh,
like, everybody just assumes that she was, like, just this crazy lady
right.
who, you know, went mad and started talking to ghosts. Like,
like,
I'm
only
sad that the show didn't get to her weird, like, obsession with spirit photography.
Right.
She's a fascinating lady who, like, went through a lot of
Yes.
And survived a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Like, the fact that her, you know, she came from a family of Confederates, that's, you know, and I imagine was estranged from them on the basis of her life choices. And then, yeah, like, they lost two of their sons very, very young. And I love that is
her
part...
Her husband got murdered in front of her.
Right, yes. Like, these are not things that we can set aside. Like, mm-hmm. even if her husband had not been assassinated right in front of her, at the exact moment when it felt like, okay, like, maybe some things will get kind of normal now that the war is over. Like, obviously there's a lot of work to be done, but I'm not going to have another enormous days-long disagreement with my husband as to our eldest child's and our only child who's reached adulthood so far on whether or not he will serve in the military and put his own life in danger. You know, like, I loved that they had this really profound disagreement argument that they not only did they have it went on for some time. She did not give ground. they, you know, Stanton gets involved because she says to him, you need to talk about this. Like, you need to talk to him. She's pointing at Abraham. Mm-hmm. And just like, please make this man see sense. This is terrible. Like, you can't do this.
Because he's his war wife.
I know. I love that acknowledgement of that aspect of their relationship, that they mm-hmm. are so close that relationship has that significance even to her. It's not jealousy. She's just stating a fact.
I always get really head up about shows that are like, that think that men, there's only one way for like men to interact with each other.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Like, 100%.
Like it has to be like, you know, it's a war story, basically. They should be like super bro-y about this.
No.
And they're not at all.
Right. No, it's actually, I was just saying, to me, it's a lot more like in MASH, the relationship between Hawkeye and BJ, who mm-hmm. like, yeah, they're both in the army and they have a lot of stuff to do and they experience a ton of trauma, like trying to save the lives of GIs whose entire physical bodies have been torn to shreds. But like, they have really like a really profound friendship that has mm-hmm. nothing to do with the rest of that.
Yeah. I have to say that one of the more moving scenes with Mary Todd Lincoln mm-hmm. comes towards the end when she's talking about her family and about how like half her that she basically comes from Southern sympathizers.
Right.
And I loved the fact that the show didn't make any bones about that.
Yeah.
And that
it wasn't uncommon.
Right.
Yeah.
Like in the Booth family,
there's a reason
too.
That they're like, mm-hmm. yeah, it was every family back yeah. then practically.
And that's something that we don't talk about in a lot of yeah. ways. That there seems to be there's this insistence on seeing the Civil War as sort of a black and white thing where the Southerners were down here in the Northern and there weren't families that mixed, but there were, and it was complicated and it was hard.
Well, I mean, and it goes back to the very, you know, widespread conspiracy of mm-hmm. of rich guys in New York
yeah.
Yeah.
and Canada who mm-hmm. were very openly Confederate sympathizers.
Yes.
And funders of the Confederacy
right.
in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, the other thing about this show that I also was really, I mean, I sort of knew going in that it probably would, but at the same time, I was a little startled by just how, like, topical a show about Lincoln's assassination was.
Yeah.
Like, somebody joked that this is I think it was Hamish Linklater who joked that this is a show about, it's a thriller about the 14th Amendment. And I was like, well, yeah, yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it's also holding up a cracked mirror to our current moment mm-hmm. and saying, yeah. like, you please do not imagine for one moment that January 6th, 2021 was an aberration or was the first time that stuff like this has happened. It absolutely is not. And it is only like our vigilance and taking steps, making decisions, actually doing things to prevent something like that from happening again that will prevent it. You have to, prevention is an active choice.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I think one of the big themes in this is that like our democracy, our country, our union
right.
does not exist accidentally or
right.
in a vacuum.
Yeah.
It is like a lot of things that are good that we just take for granted as existing eternally without any, you know, work on our part. It
right.
takes you have to hold it together.
Yeah.
Like the union did not stand out of luck.
Right. Right.
Like people worked really hard to ensure that happened. And
yes.
everybody since then has had to keep working very hard. And we have to keep working very hard.
Yes.
My friend Marika puts it, the arc of the universe bends towards justice, but you have to jump up and down on that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All of that stuff. Yeah. And I think it enhances our correct perception of Booth's villainy. You know, it's the script, it's Boyle's performance, and it is, you know, it's never stated outright, but we are just given example after example after example of how he wanted to take credit for everything and responsibility for nothing. Like, he just, that was his whole, he is just a creature of surfaceness. Like, there is no there. And that could have worked out great for him. Like, he was handsome. He was successful. Audiences loved him. There's a brief moment in the first episode where he goes to pick up his mail at Ford's Theater. And, like, there's a tasteful nude that a lady of the era had sent him. And just like, wow, he really threw all of that away for this. Like, to do this. That's what he chose?
Ugh. Yep. And there's a moment where it's Stanton's wife says to him, you know, have you ever met a problem that you can delegate?
No, absolutely not.
As somebody who often suffers from that same affliction, I feel him.
It's juxtaposed against some scene with Booth, and all I could think is, as opposed to Booth, who could never find something that he couldn't delegate. And honestly, had he done a little bit more of the work himself, he might have pulled this off. And honestly, it was his laziness and incompetence that made it so that he didn't succeed.
Yeah, it's also very lucky that he can't jump.
Yes.
That too.
Yes. In the grand tradition of white men, could not jump.
Thank heavens for that. Yes. Honestly, like I just feel like this show is so good and I just want so many people to watch it. And I know that so many people don't watch Apple TV, that it has such a tiny footprint in the streaming world. And that it's one of those things where like so few people watch it because so few people realize that they have like free access to it if they buy Apple products.
Right.
And like it's and that they just assume that there's nothing there for them. And like I just
so much.
And it's one of those things where like I'm just like, yes, but you have to watch this because seriously, that's the best Abraham Lincoln I've ever seen.
Oh, let's talk about that for a second, because I will say my boss, hi Nick, really hates this portrayal. He's watched Manhunt and really likes it, but his least favorite part is this portrayal of Lincoln.
Oh, what are his objections?
I think this Lincoln is great.
I love this Lincoln. What does Nick not like about it?
I think he doesn't think he's like Lincoln-y enough. You know what I mean? And I think that is sort of like, I could kind of see, because we have like, much like we have this idea of like what men are supposed to be like, we have this very sort of like cultural idea of Abraham Lincoln.
The Daniel Day Lewis idea of Daniel Day Lincoln, of Abraham Lincoln. Okay.
Right.
And honestly,
but I love that he's so like,
he's a goofball
and dorky.
Yeah.
And his little like old lady shawl that he wears all around everywhere. I love it.
Which apparently was, that is something that he did do. I mean, you can imagine how hard it would have been for such an incredibly elongated, lanky body, you know, that did not have much insulation. It would have been difficult for him to stay warm enough. You know, you got to have those insulating layers.
Oh, wait, is this where I tell everyone that I think Abraham and Lincoln and I have the same genetic disorder? I have this weird genetic disorder. That's why my fingers and stuff are so long.
Marfan syndrome?
So big. It's called Marfan syndrome.
Yeah. Interesting.
I was like, me and Lincoln, like that.
Ooh, just like that.
I also love a giant shawl.
They're terrific.
I just love the fact that Linklater took one look at Daniel Day-Lewis's like defining portrayal of Lincoln that we all assume is the Lincoln, and said nuts to that. Lincoln was a dork. Lincoln was a nerd.
It's very human. It's very human to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like it's very. Like a constant reminder-ish of like, it must have been really hard to be Abraham Lincoln. You know
yes.
I mean? Oh my God. Like, yes.
Yes.
And like, just that's got to be like a difficult life to live.
Yes.
Both in terms of how like brutishly short it ended up being, and also like just all of the expectation and what you were supposed to be and do. And he's just this like tall nerd.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I loved about it, is that this is, to me, this is so like, it's the portrayal of Lincoln that I've always wanted to see and didn't know I needed until now. Right. Like watching it was so like I had this moment of yes.
I like that they very purposefully did not have him do the speeches.
Oh,
like,
yes.
He gets like a couple of decent monologues about like, you know, why we have to treat the rebels in a certain way when they're returning to the country, like sort of like, you know, like a person when you get like really get into like the theme of your argument you're making to somebody and you like really feel it. But that feels very normal to me. It's not they don't show any of his oratory.
No. They don't show him giving the Gettysburg Address. They don't show him doing any of the famous stuff. They show him wandering around battlefields. And like there's a scene in episode, I think it was episode three,
He's in his office, babe. He's in the office. He's not on a battlefield.
Okay. No, there was a scene where maybe it's not. There's a scene in episode 3 that I saw that I just where they show a battlefield where I just it was so striking. Of just seeing like all the destruction and thinking about how we had to rebuild completely. And that's the other thing I really loved about this show is how it didn't shy away from how badly.
Yeah.
We wrecked ourselves.
Yeah.
Over
yeah.
this. And that really also brought home to me, like, because, you know, like there's this incredibly stupid movie out right now called Civil War that's written by a Brit. And it's about how Texas and California are going to team up. And that's how you know it's written by a Brit. Because Texas and California never team up in real life. And I get that it's supposed to be like about how, you know, how like America could rip itself apart at any moment. But like actually seeing like the aftermath of when America ripped itself apart the first time, like I never want that. And yeah. I don't think we should want that. And I don't think that's a thing we should ever want ever again. Yeah.
Anyway, my last thing that I had written in my notes, like we've actually hit all the other ones that I had jotted down, sort of relates a little bit to the unexpected, like the pleasing unexpectedness, Nick's objections notwithstanding, of this slightly goofier portrayal of Lincoln is, you know, like, I love history, and I know darn well that just because in the 1800s we did not have color photography, it does not mean that the entire world was actually in black and white or sepia toned. Like, I know that that is true. However, only ever seeing images from that period, film images that are black and white or sepia toned, it definitely, you know, seeing hundreds of them over the course of decades will make you kind of think that the whole era was like drab and kind of black and white, and we didn't develop like all the myriad flesh tones that we understand and enjoy today when we look at our fellow humans, like that they don't exist. And this vision of the mid 1860s is so colorful. Like the costumes, all the waistcoats, Mary Todd Lincoln's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful dress that she wears to the theater, which has, I think, like roses on it. And the thing that really got me, like, to the point that I hit pause and would exclaim about it, were the wallpapers. Those wallpapers are incredible. And apparently that is, you know, they are historically accurate, like to a high degree. Like, they're not actual things that were on the walls in the 1800s, but they strongly resemble, and the color palettes are, it was a colorful time, guys.
Yeah, because they didn't have television, and they didn't have, this is how they got visual stimulation.
Yeah.
What's so interesting is the things that the show chooses to be faithful to. Like I said, a lot of Mary Sims' story did not happen, but like the wallpaper is legit, or the scene when they take Lincoln across the street to the house that he dies in.
Yeah.
The him laying catty cornered on the bed. Like,
oh,
that's
because it
true.
Doesn't fit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't fit because he's too tall.
Yeah.
And they remembered to do that.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think, I mean, yeah, all of those things are choices. And I think that, yeah, as you said earlier, like, there's such a good rationale for giving Mary Sims, you know, story elements that didn't technically happen, but that really work in terms of the storytelling and in terms of our appreciation for her contributions, which is really cool.
Anyway, this is the kind of show that makes me glad that Apple TV exists, even if people aren't watching. And this is
I loved it.
And honestly, this is the kind of thing that, like, honestly, like, I don't know if I can quite put this correctly, because it's a thing that I've been sort of working on in my brain, and I hope it comes out correctly. When Netflix first said that it was going to, like, come out there and, like, do shows, and it didn't care whether or not people watched, it was going to make television for television's sake and make television for people who really loved television and wanted to watch television. Mm-hmm. And it didn't it wasn't going to cancel things because people didn't watch them, and it wasn't going to cancel things because advertisers didn't like them. It was going to just make stuff. And I feel like Apple TV is actually fulfilling that promise in a way that Netflix didn't. And I feel that Manhunt is one of those shows that we get now because Apple TV is fulfilling that promise, and that these are the kinds of shows that we are being blessed with, as long as Apple TV is perfectly happy to make shows as a bonus for the people who are going out and buying Apple TV boxes.
I would. I know no streamers release numbers, but I would actually love to see their numbers for this show.
Oh, no, they're tiny. Really, they're tiny.
I feel like it's had a really good word of mouth.
No, but they're
tiny. It's always like top of the list on my Apple TV home.
No. It is. Okay.
For Apple TV, I think this show is a success.
Oh, yes, it is. The problem is that Apple TV has such a tiny...
When we say tiny, what actual subscription numbers are we talking about?
I would have to actually go search through my email to find them. Okay. But they are silly small.
They
don't care. They're getting Emmy nominations.
No, I know. And that's kind of the thing is that Apple TV doesn't make television to make money. It makes television as a loss leader to sell hardware.
Yes, it is 100%.
It's in a different business in a way than say NBC. NBC makes television to make television to sell television, right? Whereas Amazon makes television as like that thing that's like that's in the dollar theater off the flea market, right? Like it's just to sell Prime subscriptions, right? Like this is not how.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. Like, partly because Amazon is such a behemoth, they make. Yeah. A lot of different kinds of shows. Like,
yes, and the truth is that they, honestly, what Amazon really makes money is hosting all of your websites. Right, that's really where its money is made.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, but your point is well taken as to, like, Apple is not making TV to make TV. I mean, I'm glad that that is the ultimate outcome. And it is, and they do make it as, like, a loss leader for all of their hardware. But that also puts them, they're not just fundamentally in a different business than NBC. They are in a fundamentally different business than their fellow streamers, Netflix included. Like they are doing very, very different things. All three of them.
Yes.
So yeah, no, yeah. But I'm very glad that it exists.
Yeah, on some level, I think it's not necessarily fair to compare all of them because like their goals are different.
Right. Right. They are doing very, very different things. And it's not just because different people work at those corporations and different, you know, they're licensing different things and greenlighting different things. I think it has to do very much with what they're trying to do, which are distinct things at Netflix, at Amazon, mm-hmm. and at Apple TV. But I feel like it's so funny. I really, really, really enjoy when we get into like the business of streamers on this show. Like I just every time you guys talk about it on other episodes and every time the conversation sort of wends that way when I am here, I really enjoy it. I think it's fascinating. And, it's one of those things like I don't wake up in the morning thinking like, I wonder what Annie and Lacey are going to say this week about like stars. But then you do. You say something really interesting about stars.
It's just I'm not finding it. But it the thing is, I read Puck on a regular basis, and
I don't know what that is.
Puck is a subscription newsletter that does the insider stuff for a bunch of different markets.
It's a fancy gossip rag.
It is a fancy gossip rag, and the gossip rag who does television and movies is Matthew Bologna, who used to. Write for the Hollywood Reporter and Deadline and stuff. And he tracks these sorts of things. And mm-hmm. he has been tracking the Apple TV Plus numbers. And every time he puts them up, they are less. Tubi beats them. Okay? Fast streamers beat them.
Wow. So they really, really punch above their weight class.
Okay. Does that put it in context for you? Like, I can't actually find the numbers off my, but that should put it in context for you. Okay.
Yeah.
Fast streamers beat Apple TV on the regular basis.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's again, I think you have to come back to the goals and stuff are different,
yes,
because fast streamers are not there to show you TV. They're there to show you ads.
It's right. That's right. Correct. And yeah, honestly, Tubi is doing a great job. Can I just tell you how many ads I have seen for Borders and Hot and Hot, whatever the Hot,
Dead
not hot,
Hot,
Dead Hot. Thank you. I have seen so many commercials for the Tubi, for the British Tubi originals in the last couple of weeks. Like, mm-hmm, I am so impressed on how much marketing those guys are doing. Like, they really have it together. I am so impressed. And that's great for them.
Anyway, I'm gonna put the hammer down on this far wandering discussion.
Yes, bring it back to Manhunt.
Sorry.
And bring it back to Manhunt. And I guess we are approaching an hour now with this. Does anyone have anything else that they need to talk about? Final thoughts they would like to share?
I'm good. Thank you, though.
I want everybody to watch more Apple TV Plus. That is my, I'm done.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Also, just like shout out to Edwin Stanton, who I could not have told you crap about before I watched the show. And now I am mildly obsessed with.
Yes. I love to see a heroic bureaucrat.
So much of
bureaucrat.
The super weird, interesting stuff about his life, the show only touches on.
Yeah.
For example, he really did barricade himself in the War Department for like 6 months.
Which is wild.
So that he could not be impeached and removed. Like, that, like, he lived in his office for like 6 months.
Dude.
I have so many logistical questions about that.
And he is the first and only Supreme Court justice that has been confirmed but never actually took the bench because he died between his nomination and his swearing in. Right? Like, just Wikipedia, like, just like basic Wikipedia. He's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's insane. The thing that I always remember, or I always forget and then suddenly remember, is that the Civil War wasn't that long ago. It was really just two grandmas back to back.
Yep. Yep.
Past ain't even the past.
Anyway, Edwin Stanton, cool dude. Google.
Yeah, don't sleep on this guy. He was really something.
Barricaded himself in his office 4 months. Months.
That's just amazing. Yeah, definitely probably screwed up his wife. Probably definitely screwed up his marriage. Anyway.
Tip of the hat to that man. Yes, but I will co-sign that more people should watch the shows on Apple TV. There's a lot of good stuff, and some of it we might even talk about on the show. The Buccaneers is coming back for season 2. I know no one watched that but me, but I loved it, so
nope,
watch it.
I also did watch it.
But Sophie, as always, thank you for coming and hanging out with us and participating in a typically wide-ranging conversation.
Listen, I don't think we know how to do it any other way, and I think that that's
nope,
great. So once again, thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. Tell the people where they can read more of your thoughts, including your thoughts on the banger of a theme song to the show we did not discuss,
yes,
which is incredible.
Yes. That I think we did a terrible disservice to the song by not covering it in depth. However, yeah, it is amazing. And I had the distinct pleasure of interviewing Danielle Ponder, who is the composer and singer on that song, the title of which is Egun, which is Yoruba for ancestor. And that you can find that interview at Grammy.com, Grammy.com. And elsewhere, you can find me at Televisions, obviously, and Primetimer, where my interview piece with Anthony Boyle is going to be up shortly, like by the end of the week. So by the time you guys are hearing this, it will have already been there. And Vulture, Daily Beast, etc. If you just Google Sophie Brookover, you're going to find my stuff. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one.
So, Annie, your turn.
You can find me on social media at Annie Bundle, basically everywhere. I'm the associate editor here at Televisions. I also freelance around the web, so if you want to know what I wrote this week, just Google Annie Bundle, because I know I'm the only one. Can you put the link to the song in the show notes? Because I'm obsessed.
Oh yeah, the song is so good. It lived in my head like rent free for 2 weeks.
And Danielle Ponder is an exceptionally gifted artist and is so thoughtful and interesting and smart and insightful. I really just can't say enough good things about her. She is somebody everyone should be listening to. That's how good her music is. She's just extraordinary.
All right. I will try to remember to put it in the show notes. I always forget that show notes are a thing that we have. But I will try to be better. I am Lacey MB on all of the things that let you pick a profile name, and I write a lot here at Televisions and around the entertainment web, but I always tweet or skeet or, what are we calling threads now? Thread my bylines? Doesn't matter. It'll be out there, or you can just Google me. I'll probably be the only Lacey Bogger Milas out there as well, but that's because I have three names now, so it's easier. If you don't want any of that, the site and the pod are on social media at Televisions Blog, all one word, on Facebook. And we live at televisions.org, where we've got news, updates, recaps, listicles, think pieces, just stuff, whatever we're writing about at the moment. Come check it out. Throw us some clicks. We would appreciate it. And if you're feeling really generous, there is a donate button up top where you can contribute and help us keep making all of this great content for your eyes and ears, and possibly get access to PBS Passport at the same time, which will let you do a lot of early exclusive binge watching type things if that is how you like to consume your TV. That's our show for the week. Thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Watch out for the wildly vacillating weather out there. We had hail here the other day. I don't know. It's crazy. That's it. As always, we appreciate you, and we'll see you next week.